Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Good morning, you're very welcome to the show. Lots of pictures of robust rugby tackles on the front pages of the papers today, and a lot of robust political rows as well. The Sunday Times dealing with AG set to lead robust defence of Super Juniors, so no surprises there. The government will be defending Pat Daly's court case that he has taken. The Sunday Independent, public back opposition over Dáil speaking time row. That's based on a poll they have. And that piece by Gabby Getovitz-Kaita starts, further chaotic scenes loom in Leinster House this week over Dáil speaking time. And I think a lot of people are wondering, why can't they make it stop? The Business Post, Irish executives in US drafted into battle Trump trade threat. So they're going to set up a strategic economic advisory panel, which is really called a CEAP, which will be a high powered group of up to 35 business leaders and experts who will be on the ground in the US and tasked with advising Simon Harris on strategic economic opportunities and risks. And the Mail on Sunday is leading with the story that Fianna Fáil has asked Matty McGrath to come back, which sounds surprising. The Irish Sun on Sunday is leading with that the gangster Freddie Thompson will not be reunited with his son when he is put behind bars. They're both behind bars now. And the Sun is leading with the funeral of Linda Nolan, of the Nolan sisters. Farewell to our Linda family, and stars turn out for emotional Nolan funeral. Okay, our panel this morning: Johnny Fallon is strategic director at Carr Communications and a former political advisor to Fianna Fáil. Gina London is the CEO and founder of Language of Leadership and a former correspondent with CNN. Maura Trasa-Ní Chealaigh is a medical doctor and columnist with the Irish Independent. And Elaine Loughlin is political editor with the Irish Examiner. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Good morning.
Can I start with you, Maura Trasa? Obviously, big chunks of the country still not just getting over the storm, still suffering from the storm. You picked a piece in the Sunday Times, How Ireland Must Build Back Better After Éowyn. What was your own experience this week?
It was a unique week. It was a long week, and I say long, and I was very lucky that my own power came back late on Sunday night, but my family on Chiararua in Carrow in County Galway were left without power until late Wednesday evening. And there's still some of my relatives who still have no power or connection to a phone or even a live mobile phone link. And I think that was the most distressing thing. You know, I think you can live without a phone, or you can live without power, or you can having both gone at the same time when you can't even get a mobile signal to check in on how people are, or even worse, if you had a medical emergency that you couldn't even call, you know, for help. That's dangerous, beyond the danger the storm presented. And I think really for all of us, we've always known it on the West Coast. I say the West Coast, I don't live on the West Coast anymore, but we've always known that always been left behind slightly in this country. And this week in particular really ripped it open and exposed how, I suppose, on the back foot we are, and how you're constantly jumping up and down, looking for assistance, looking for grant aid, looking for development, looking for infrastructure. And you're kind of, you look down upon, and you're told, sure, you guys in the West, you all want this, you live off grants. We're seen as a playground. People come to us for their holidays, but they don't want to invest in us. They don't want to invest in how we live. And I think it's shocking in 2025 that when my phone coverage dropped very, very early on Friday morning, I couldn't get in touch with any of my relatives all day Friday. And I managed to get to a house that had electricity on Friday evening, and I told them, turn on the RTE there, that broadcast near my family, I might see what's happening. And next thing, the continuity announcer said, we can't go to the RTE, there's a problem with the link. I'm thinking, holy Moses, what's happened back there? And then the 6-1, the first shot on the 6-1 was a massive wind turbine that was felled 15 minutes from my family home. So eventually, late on Friday evening, a text came through from my sister, who had managed to get a text from my sister-in-law, who'd driven 26 miles towards Galway City to send a text say, we're all fine, because you're worried about your parents. My parents are now in that stage of life where you are, of course, worried about them when you don't hear from them. And then I actually saw online last night, I just saw a map of the power grid and everyone's still left without power, and to Heller, to Connacht, it's still very true in this country. And this week in particular really laid it out to us. We don't count.
Okay. That's how people feel down there right now.
That's how people feel. We're angry because you are told you are. And I say this as somebody who is, I'd hate for anybody to think I am regressive. I'm not. I'm very progressive. I believe in climate change. I believe we have to do all these things to make the world a better place for the people coming after us in particular. But like when you're being lectured by people, buy your electric car, get your energy efficient home, buy this, buy that. But like, no grants are coming till you pay for it up front. The people in the West have less money than the rest of the country, for an example. So we are paying carbon tax after carbon tax. We're paying for this, we're paying for that. People in Ranelagh can have their electric car. We can't afford to buy one. And even if we could, where would we have been for the last week? And I know it was unprecedented. Like this type of storm, nobody in the West of Ireland expected to have power and everything on Friday morning. We knew this. But to be left a week later, that's madness. Like the preparation and that article by Patrick O'Donoghue like really lays out, you know, where is our preparation? Are we prepared enough? And the simple answer is no. And there is, you know, bits in that article telling us things we need to do. But the main gist of it is there's an urgent need to invest in more resilient systems. And instead of giving out to people, well, you know, you live in these houses in the middle of nowhere, you should live in the cities. First of all, we can't afford to. Second of all, we don't want to. And third of all, this is the way the country has been. So why can't we find an Irish solution to an Irish problem? Why are we always reactive?
Okay. Johnny, where are you living?
In Longford.
Yeah. And you were badly affected as well?
We were indeed, and we're not. You know, you're used to people talking about the wild Atlantic way, and I always say we're more the mild Midlands way. You know, we don't get wild stuff, but we certainly got it in this storm, and it was tough. Power went on the night of the storm on the Friday night. We didn't get power back till Tuesday. The water ran out on Saturday. Someone said to me, what's it like living there? And I said, I'm living like a 17th century king. I'm surrounded by copious amounts of candles and I'm washing myself in the finest of mineral water that I can get in the shops. But it was tough. It was very tough. And it's very tough. There's areas of the county still that haven't got their power back. Now, there's some things that I will say we have to balance out, because we can get on a quick narrative about storms and what they do. We do have to balance. I think there were big strategic things that we weren't prepared for, like the water being connected and water treatment plants. That really shouldn't be happening. You shouldn't be running out of water in it. I think there are big issues. There's always problems living in rural Ireland with electricity. But, you know, there are ways we can handle that a bit better. Now, there are some things.
Like how?
There are things we can do with power lines, particular spurs and that, where we can avoid, like, first of all, poles. One of the problems is poles, old timber poles, you know.
Which they are in the process of replacing with newer, resilient
and
poles.
And that needs to happen faster and quicker. But I will say one other thing, just before we get on to the kind of thing of the narrative of it. I have two electric cars. They're not a problem during a storm, right? They're the best thing. In fact, if I'd been better prepared, one of them can use an adapter to power your appliances. So that would have been good. But they weren't a problem, because the only thing I had to do with the electric car was I had to go back to being like when I had petrol and diesel. I had to leave home to get refueled. But that's the only thing. But it's not a problem having an electric car. I don't have an open fire, but I did have a gas fire. And we do have a gas hob. And there are certain things like that you're just resilient enough for. And you kind of look, but you don't, like, there's a narrative sometimes during it that you'd be lost without open fires and logs and coal and turf. You wouldn't. You can do that with gas cylinders as well, and they're healthier for you in your house. And you can perfectly survive on with an electric car. But there's so much more at a strategic level. We don't want to get bogged down in those debates, because that's what happens to us. We need to look at the strategic level of old poles. And the biggest thing, I'll say, just picking up on the point you made, I think one of the biggest things that stood out for me was actually the loss of broadband signal and a mobile phone signal not being good enough anywhere in the rural Ireland and most of the areas. And now most, even elderly people, are actually using mobile phones in the house. You couldn't get on the power check app. You couldn't download. And then I discovered one of the things I'd made a mistake of. I don't actually own a radio that's battery operated. So I had to go out to the car to listen to the radio and find out. And you're only going to do that at certain times. And while everybody's, oh, we're doing rolling news, you actually would be better off being able to say to people, there will be an update in your area, your local radio, whatever, at 3 o'clock today, get to your car and listen to
it. I think everybody was like Power and Water, we understand it's a folk memory of particularly Power. This almost was a new thing for people that we suddenly realised, my God, you go into a black hole, cut off from the outside world, cut off from your family, everything. Muratrasa mentioned one-off rural housing there, and it has come up as an issue. Like, I saw one stat in a piece in the Irish Times yesterday that in East Clare, there's 60 kilometres of electricity wire to serve 150 customers. Is that an issue?
Yeah, it is. It is an issue. And look, it's always been. I live in rural Ireland in one-off housing. I think there's a certain balance we have to get to. I wouldn't agree either with the idea that we end one-off housing and rural people can never live in rural Ireland again. But
yeah,
at the same time...
we do know that this is why it has slowed right down now. There were hundreds of thousands of people, Gina, one sec, hundreds of thousands of people coming back every day at a particular point, and it's slowed down and down and down because of this.
It is, and it's the numbers, and there are certain things you've got to do and accept. Like, I accept living in rural Ireland, there's certain things you can't have, and you won't have the level of services, and we have to accept that in rural Ireland. We can't demand urban city centre services and want your one-off housing. There's benefits and whatever to each of them. The only thing I will say for it is I do think there are areas where either just simply replacing the poles or putting a wire underground would actually save the cost of repairing, teams going out, crews going out, with a bit of forward investment for some very small lines.
100 billion to put the whole power lines.
That's not going to happen. I think there are certain areas where we could save people having to go out regularly and crews going out fixing it with one small investment in it just to save it from
power.
Okay,
Gina, just one second. Elaine, the government got a wallop here, didn't they? One of those unexpected wallops.
And you can understand, I think there was a patience at the start because this was an unprecedented storm. And we are now 8-9 days in and I still have family who are without power as well. I was without power and I was laughing because I was in the same situation going out to my car on the Friday when I was supposed to be working and had no internet, no reception and was going out for the bulletins once an hour to listen to what was happening around the country. But it was amazing, and you see it in rural Ireland. And we've moved into an A-rated home. We're very lucky only a few months ago in October in a rural village. So we're not out in the middle of nowhere, Brendan. Although I think maybe some people living in Dublin may think we are.
Do you want to tell us where you are just so people can make their own minds?
Yeah, we're in County Meath. So it's not, we're not halfway up a mountain, put it that way. Yeah. But we've been without power 5 times since October. Now, 2 of those are planned outages and you prepare for those. But others were like the most recent storm. We were left without power. Thankfully, it came back by the Monday. But we've been encouraged to retrofit houses, to build new houses without chimneys. And I know the gas hob, we're lucky we have a gas hob, but a lot of new houses are completely reliant on electricity. So when the electricity goes down, it means you've no heating, you've no way to cook, you've no way to boil your egg, to toast, you've no water either because your pump system for water is based on electricity. And I think there has to be some sort of an agreement or some sort of approach from government to perhaps retrofit those new homes now with generators. And I know it's in the newspapers today and the Taoiseach came out during the week saying there will be grants, especially for community centres to buy generators for future storms. But why wasn't this thought about before when we're moving to electricity as our main form of light, heat, and as I said, even providing water? And again,
maybe they've learned a lesson. Now, this
was
particularly dramatic once in 100 years kind of storm.
It was, but they're going
to
become
be into
more
the
frequent.
Future. Yeah. Gina.
Real quickly, because I live in Dublin, and so I fortunately wasn't affected, but I grew up in rural Indiana. And Indiana is larger in population and geography than Ireland, albeit with the caveat that we don't have the mountains that there are here. But we certainly do not have the kind of backward infrastructure that this country has. And we don't have 2 weeks of 50,000 plus people still without electricity if there were a storm like this. I certainly agree that it's an unprecedented storm and that there couldn't have been every single contingency in place. But I think to draw back to Maura's initial bringing up, and as you did too, Brendan, the Patrick O'Donoghue article in the Sunday Times, quoting Barry McMillan, an emeritus professor of Dublin City University School, talking about how it's essential to understand that the grid is being gobbled up by an expansion in electricity demand, and that is because of the expansion in the data center demand in this country. And if we want to get ahead of this, we've got to redouble our efforts to build up more transmissions, more supply, and more battery storage, proactive infrastructure systems, and dedication and commitment, not just, oh, we've had a crisis, and then we go back to chronic problem as it's been, needs to be in the forefront of this country. Because when I moved here almost 10 years ago, this idea of rural Ireland as a stumbling block for any kind of forward thinking and future proofing was already being discussed. And yeah, so okay. This should certainly serve as a clarion call.
I saw an interesting point made somewhere the other day that apparently refurbished EV batteries could be put into houses and as a backstop in these situations. Can I come back to you more about that piece about how Ireland must build back better? Also talks about making communities, a whole of society response, communities trained to deal with this and everything. And you, reading it, you do think, okay, so this is, they're doing this in the Nordic countries, aren't they great? That's what happened organically. Isn't it?
It is what happened organically. But again, with the lack of phone coverage and stuff, it took 3 or 4 days. I mean, for me, the most astounding thing is that this storm happened late Thursday night, early Friday morning. We had people wondering what was going on Saturday, Sunday. Monday evening, we began hearing about these emergency response hubs, which were already happening. A lot of them happened organically, like you said, in various GAA clubs and community centres. So this is what the Nordic countries do.
Do we need a plan for that? So in the future, in every community and village in Ireland, that the GAA club or somewhere is designated as the place, there are facilities there and people know what to do.
You could potentially plan for that. But I mean, could we even rely on every GAA club having a generator to be able to do it, as an example?
But I suppose that we put them in places and not necessarily the GAA club, the parish hall, whatever.
That's the trouble. Like, so at the moment, though, like, from a humanitarian point of view, from a social point of view, going to the local GAA club for your communal shower and your swimming togs is grand if you're 22, right? If you're vulnerable, if you're elderly, if you're disabled, that becomes much more difficult. If you're low on cash, last week is probably the leanest week for most people living in this country. You know, you're 5 weeks after Christmas. January's 92 million weeks long. And like, I have relatives who had to spend money they didn't have to stay in hotels in Galway, which is not cheap. I know during that, now yesterday they announced saying, you know, oh, you know, we will give some funding back to people. I mean, it's not paid up front. So again, no more than the retrofitting of houses and no more than, you know, getting yourself onto this regenerative energy wave, which is important, which needs to be done. If you haven't got the money up front in the first place, you are caught between
fairness,
a rock and a hard
place.
In fairness,
they do seem to be giving it out quite quickly. It seems to be a 2 or 3 day turnaround is what they're endeavouring for if you fill out the forms. Am I right, Elaine?
It does. But if you look to places like Scotland, where they'll just automatically give you out a grant if you've been without electricity for a certain amount of time, I think that gives people more clarity and more comfort if you know you don't have to go through the rigmarole of trying to apply, trying to get internet or phone reception to get
to
in contact.
Find out what you're actually
entitled
to.
Yeah, and I think the community hub, we saw it with the Mehel and it was so encouraging. But again, if you were without electricity, you couldn't go on Facebook or you couldn't go on social media to find out that your local community centre or your local boxing club is providing these services. So again, as Maura Trasa said, if we knew in advance, OK, it's not great, I'm without electricity, but at least I have the local hall to go to and I know I'll get my phone charged.
Yeah, Johnny, final word on this. We should have rung Elon Musk and got a Starlink put up over Connemara
for our
broadband.
And it's a small thing, but I think, you know, when you look at the communications of this, in my own space in communications, we're very good sometimes at telling everybody in advance of the storm, this is what you got to do. Stay in, stay away from this, don't touch that.
And that was very successful this time. It was viewed as being good, clear warnings.
Excellent. Where we're not as good is in telling people, we kind of believe that we'll tell them about the storm and then when it's happened, we'll tell them about how to recover from it. I think in future, we need to communicate to people in advance. download this video, download this link. Here's the information for the recovery, because this storm will pass. And if you've lost power, water, everything, here's what you should be looking for.
So did the government, because they were distracted by everything else that was going on, do you think, did they say, OK, look, Medairn are looking after warnings here. And, you know, the government was not obviously adequately warned for what you might call the next day themselves.
Yeah, I think they were also in a space where they were half thinking, you know, well, you don't know how bad it's going to be. It might pass us by. We might be overreacting. And they do get a lot of flack being told, as do Met Aaron, oh, you told us it was going to be bad and it wasn't as bad as we expected. Rather than feeling lucky, we give out about it. But I think there's a lot more we could do in that in the future, that we have to be more resilient, because these things are going to happen more often.
OK, we'll take a break. Johnny Fallon, Gina London, Mara Trasson, Ní Chealaigh and Elaine Loughlin are staying with us. Welcome back. Our panel's still here. Johnny Fallon, Gina London, Mara Trasson, Ní Chealaigh and Elaine Loughlin. And to look at the papers today, your reminder, was she Brenda from Brighton? We've had too much politics now. We had an election, but there's been too much politics since. Johnny, this Dáil speaking row. You see, there's an attitude among some people in the papers that, oh no, anyone outside the political bubble is not following this or whatever. But I think people probably are fairly engaged with it on some level. Could you just tell us really simply how we've got here?
Well, I suppose the government did a deal with the Rural Independent Group, or a technical group, and some of those became ministers and got jobs out of the deal, and some of them are not. And the government did a deal with these on the basis that they would have speaking time. There would still be a group within the Oireachtas for speaking time, but that the normal position would be that they're in the opposition. Now, the opposition parties immediately reacted to that on the day that we were due to elect a Taoiseach. Everyone will remember there's mayhem in the Dáil. And that was because the opposition party said if they're supporting the government, then they're in the government. They're a group that is not part of the opposition. They're going to vote with the government every time, and they shouldn't have some of our speaking time. So that was all fine. They had a big row about it. They argued about it. They put in place some measures to get through a day to elect the Taoiseach after they failed the first day. They went back. They had some meetings. Claire Scott in the Sunday Times tells us last Monday there was a Teams meeting, which they didn't particularly enjoy because they couldn't have a good row on Teams. It's a bit more awkward, as we've all discovered over the last few years, to have that on Teams. But they were struggling to come to any agreement because the opposition say, look, these people are supporting and going to vote with the government, so they can't have that time. Government then came back with a couple of different proposals after much to-ing and fro-ing, one of which was just to extend speaking time and to recognise them as an un-kind of aligned group, and said...
So the government viewing that as their compromise, that they're... stepping down a bit there.
Stepping down a bit. They said, well, they won't be taking your time. They won't take up the opposition. So the opposition can still have their time, but these people will be on the opposition benches, but they'll have extra time, you know, if you like, to speak. That didn't go down too well with the opposition, though, either, because what's happened during the week is the mood has changed. And now it's not so much about, well, are they taking our time? It's everybody realising the opposition has seen now an open goal in closely aligning Michael Lowry with the government, and they want everyone to know he is a government supporter. The government see a benefit in saying, no, there are some independent TDs within the government. They're different to independent TDs who might choose to vote with us or not. And one of those is Michael Lowry.
And who might have been involved in drafting the programme for government.
Yeah.
Right.
So they want to push him to the opposition. And now we've got in this quagmire now where there isn't agreement. They've asked, can they have a meeting of the leaders in advance of Tuesday's session? Because we may have repeat scenes if they don't come to some agreement. But the bottom line is here, whoever ends up, is Michael Lowry going to be seen as an independent on the opposition benches, or is he an independent within the government? And both sides seem to want to shunt him off one way or another, and that's at the heart of it.
And from what we hear, he himself is standing his ground as well, whatever that ground is. He seems
He's
to be fairly determined as well. Elaine, before we get to what might happen next week, Shane Ross in the Sunday Independent you were looking at has a kind of a good overview of what I think a lot of people are just thinking on the street and in the pub, like, is that having had a fairly assured campaign and a successful campaign, Fianna Fáil, there's been a lot of messy situations in the last few weeks, and that Sinn Féin have clearly decided we are going full throttle at taking any gap here to undermine them, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. And Shane Ross mentions this, that the political agenda, astonishingly, is being set by the leader of the opposition. That's Mary Lou MacDonald. I would say he does put a focus on Sinn Féin taking advantage here. I think this is a whole of opposition move, and really a issue which the entirety of the opposition have become one coherent force on and are really exercised upon. And I would say, you know, they're not. There may be a bit of dramatics here, especially when we saw it in the Dáil and what happened and the absolute chaos that ensued. But it's something that they feel strongly on. And you'd wonder if they could get this, if they're working so well together now on this issue, why could they not do the same when they were talking about forming a left-wing government? It's just astonishing that they can do it now.
Will happen next week, do you think? Are we going to have more mayhem? A lot of people seem to think we will.
You do feel that it's going to go that way, because there was over 2 days, Thursday and Friday, there was 10 hours of discussions, and we had breakout meetings where the new Cian Chóir Leibhéireann and Murphy was scuttling between rooms. And actually, I think it's important to note that one room was occupied by the opposition, the other room was occupied by members of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Michael Lowry. And another important point you mentioned there, Brendan, as well, is I think the regional independents, the Michael Lowry group, will state, well, this all happened before. We deals, you know, they might cite the Tony Gregory deal or other independents.
And the Taoiseach has mentioned the confidence in supply a lot
exactly.
in the last few days.
But the difference there, especially with independents, was those independents, yes, agreed to support the government of the day, but they weren't involved in the nitty-gritty of drafting the programme for government and signing off on that. And I think that's where the difference lies. And people outside of Leinster House, and sometimes when you're working in Leinster House, you think that some little spat that has been going on in the Dáil chamber is absolutely massive, and then you walk outside the gates and you realise that life is continuing on and no one really cares outside the bubble. But I think this one is something that has transcended the day-to-day politics of Leinster House.
And there's just a bad smell off it for people.
I think yeah, so, yes. Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't put Laurie into a hybrid room or something. He was in the government room. Gina, you were looking at this as well.
Well, yes, because I think, well, by the way, I think it's important to point out that today is Groundhog Day, and this feels bit like the Groundhog Day when it comes to politicking sometimes, because is it an unusual situation where you've got an internal battle going on within the government and then the opposition making hay out of it? No, I mean, that's the normal politicking. What happened, though, of course, is this row over speaking rights was shown all over on the video clips and again, and it was unseemly. Now, from, again, my seat at the outsider's table here, it's less unseemly than a lot of the politicking and the name-calling and the bullying that happens in that place that I used to be calling home in the United States. So I do think it's still important to note that the Irish coalition-led government and the potential, once again, revolving of a Taoiseach is something to really be commended when you think about what the conflicts in different governments can be about. This particular government, in my experience, is actually doing pretty well. Now, do they need to figure out the optics around the Michael Lowry and the opposition, not opposition group? Absolutely, because you simply
can't be
both. Okay, but
do you think democracy is safe?
I do. I think
are trying to say.
Okay. I think we're okay.
Okay. Mara Trasse, you picked Fionnán Sheehan in the Sunday Independent. Shoddy treatment, shabby handling and a grubby deal.
Yeah, because the plain people of Ireland, that's what it looks like. And no more than others, the way Lane was speaking there about how sometimes you come out of Leinster House, and once upon a time I worked in journalism myself, and you'd be really exercised about something and you realise nobody cares. In this issue, people do seem to care, because even on the front page of the same paper, the Sunday Independent, they have that survey there and the poll that says that 2/3 of the country can kind of see exactly what's going on here. You know, that they just, this is grubby. And
yeah,
we don't, and
yeah.
Interestingly as well.
Okay, I'll just give people the stat on that now that you've mentioned it. So the question is, do you think Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael should be dealing with independent TD Michael Lowry in light of the findings of the Moriarty Tribunal and his conviction for tax offences? 66% say no, 11% say don't know, 23% say yes. So this poll would suggest that it's about 3-1 against the Lowry deal. Johnny, you picked a piece there, sorry, you know, where, yeah, the Business Post, Shane Coleman. And the government has legitimised Lowry's attempt at redemption from corrupt past. Does this all go back to, is the original sin here that they got involved with Lowry in the first place?
It is to a degree, certainly. They got involved, and then I think their second mistake in government was this was predictable. And, you know, look, they've a lot of advisors, they've a lot of smart people in there. They should have seen this coming, and they should have seen the issue arising. The fact that they didn't was incredibly naive, and I think does speak to a problem that this government has had in getting off. They got through, particularly from Fianna Fáil's perspective, got through an election, saw it successful. Fine Gael was a bit rattled on the back. And they've kind of sleepwalked into government. It hasn't been a big,
did
tough
they
negotiation.
Did they think Lowry would do this quietly, like, and stay in the background? Do they not know Lowry, like?
Yeah, I mean, you would. I mean, you would think it was an obvious one to be able to predict. I think they probably thought people were just going to go, oh, look, they're happy enough. They've got a government. Let them get on with it. Let them get on with the issues and just elect the government and move on. And people wouldn't think on it too much. But I think people are thinking about it, and it is problematic. Now, it's a double-edged sword, though, because I think the government now have been damaged badly by this, and they need to get quickly on to actual policy. And unfortunately, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have displayed over the last while, that previous government, that they tend to think in five-year terms. Unlike Mr. Trump, who's gone straight in, and whether you like him or hate him, he's certainly doing things over there for his first 100 days.
So they're failing to change the story. They're out of control of the narrative,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, they think it's going to go on. Now, the danger for the opposition, though, is as well, they need to get control of this before we go back to the Dáil, because the challenge for the opposition is people are going to say, if you do this for speaking rights, if you can bring down the House for speaking rights, bring it down for housing, bring it down to stop the budget, bring it down to stop any measure going through. The demand on opposition will now go up at every issue. Why don't you do what you did about the speaking rights? Bring down the Dáil if you have to. And that's going to be, that's a genie once out of the bottle. It'll be tough for the opposition to contain.
Yeah. Elaine, you picked, you wanted to talk about Miriam Lawrence's piece in the Irish Times yesterday about the question of the ditching of Lowry and how much muttering is there about that?
I think so, and it goes back to Johnny's point there of the government being out of control on this one, because I think there is mutterings, and Miriam Lawrence did mention it yesterday in her column, about why does the government think it owes Lowry so much? Like, what does he have on them that they're backing him, that Fianna Fáil are now getting their own legal senior counsel advice on this
What are people saying in Leinster House about why he seems to have so much leverage?
Well, that's the question that's been asked, because the regional independents, they've got their Ciarán Corlin position, they've got their super juniors, their junior ministers. It's seen as a very lucrative deal, and although they will strenuously deny it, I think people do accept that there will be constituency deals done as well, or certainly funding for whether it's the sports grants or other community grants.
Within the National Development Plan.
Exactly,
unwritten. Yeah.
So there is that question of why is Micheál Martin and Simon Harris, why are they not saying to Michael Lowry, you got a good deal here, sit back, you take your penance or you take your medicine now, you've made your point, but you have to stand down because we need a Dáil functioning and we cannot replicate the chaos that we had a week ago. And that's not happening. Instead,
yeah, so
they're digging deeper down.
Before we leave that, yeah, there's someone quoted there today and said, why are we choosing the Hill of Lowry to die on? Like, yeah. Do you have any theory as to...
only theory I'd have on it is that I think Micheál Martin, particularly as Taoiseach, likes to do idea that he's done a deal, he wants that deal to go through. And I think he's quite obstinate about the fact that he is determined. I think one thing about Micheál Martin is his opposition to Sinn Féin. It's much greater than Fianna Fáil's opposition to Sinn Féin. Micheál Martin's personal opposition to Sinn Féin is much greater than it is organisationally. And I think he's in a position now where himself and Simon Harris this has built up, and we will not be bullied into backing down on something by Sinn Féin. And to them in their own bubble, I think Michael Lowry is not as big a problem to them in their heads as Sinn Féin has become in their heads. Okay. And they really need to get out of that bubble.
It seems like a lot of political rows, they have them and then they all walk off and go for a pint afterwards. This seems to become a bit more visceral and a bit more personal. On to the other kind of perceived missteps as well. Gina, you picked a piece by Alison O'Connor in the Sunday Times, her column, "The Taoiseach is No Ally to Women in Politics."
Yeah, look, the last government, there were four ministers that were female. This government, we've got three. There are more men named James in the Dáil than there are women in the Dáil at this point. And so Alison...
In the cabinet.
And Alison O'Connor has a very good part where she, again, is taking on Micheál Martin, particularly about his legacy around will he be one that has actually championed the input and the women in politics. And she says no. She also then goes on to say that we need to have a reworking of the requirement of the quota for the number of women that serve that are up for election, and that there is just needs to be more reform because this is not the way forward.
Okay, Elaine, you picked Ger Colleran in the Mail on Sunday on this. I mean, look, Alison made that the point about Micheál Martin very trenchantly last week, and I think it's a bit unfair to pin it all on him. There are other issues like pipeline. He didn't have a huge number of people to choose from either. And there is all that as well.
Yeah, and look, when we get round to this, and Ger Colleran has done a good job, as is Alison O'Connor, on this issue today, I just sigh because I feel like a political commentator. We've been through this argument and it's been put very powerfully, very eloquently in the Sunday newspapers about why we should have, you know, maybe representation for 50% of the population. But it just feels, as someone who is paid to analyse and to comment on politics, that we've been making these same arguments for 10, 15, 50 years as to why there should be equality, not just for women, but for those in people with disabilities, those from the travelling community, those in minorities, and still we don't see it happen. And that's
and
the issue.
And are there things that mitigate against those people running for election, running for councils in the first place and getting into that pipeline?
I think so, because if you look at my own career trajectory personally, as a journalism student, I looked to Geraldine Kennedy, a really powerful force within journalism, and you saw a pathway there. When I entered Leinster House, I had people like Mary Minahan, Mary Regan, Niamh Lyons, who had threaded the same path for me and other females in Leinster House. If you are a woman thinking of getting into politics today, you see a political system that has never had a female Taoiseach, that has never had a female finance minister. And you look at the cabinet, and it's not just about appointing women, it's where they are appointed. You look at today's cabinet, and we have finance, public expenditure, enterprise, trade, foreign affairs, finance, and the Taoiseach's own department, all male. You then look across to possibly, I think, departments that would be considered linked to the home more, education, health, children.
So women are good enough for the softer skills kind of thing. Is it I hesitate to say women's work, but yeah,
that's what the current cabinet does project. Now, obviously, we have had female justice ministers have done very well and were very capable and very able in those positions. But when you do look at the current cabinet, that's the signal or the image that it portrays.
Maura Trasad, there's a text here, 51% of the electorate are women. Truth is, women don't vote for women. They're smart and they vote based on merit. What do you think of that?
Oh, there's a lot to be unpicked there. Even just to continue on what Elaine was saying there, when you mentioned we've had female justice ministers, I mean, it's only a few months ago that some political commentators and journalists felt fit to ask Helen McEntee about, you know, taking her maternity leave. I mean, that's madness in this day and age, you know what I mean? And 51% of the electorate are women, yes. But however, I think it's, and I hope no woman who ran for election would take offence from this, but I think it's very obvious, and any woman who did run under the major umbrellas, say Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, for a lot of them, they were brought in as sweepers because we did have to have the 40% quota. So then there were women who weren't known to the electorate, they weren't maybe pushed along in a way. The political machine was not oiled and not greased enough for those women, but those women did have plenty of transferable votes to put the men in.
It takes time to build these types of pipelines that you mentioned, Brendan, and that Elaine and Maura are talking about. And yet, while that is being developed and there's trying to be a push, then there's that pushback, the rolling back of DEI in the U.S., of course, but that culture war of, oh, well, they've had every opportunity, then now we're upset about it because we're not getting opportunity. And that ability to have a push and an integrated system while not getting complaining about it, it's a very delicate balance, and you see what's happening, the pushback in the United States, and it's a real, real pity.
Okay. Moving on, Johnny, the Sunday Independent, Niamh Horan, has a piece. Journalist O'Toole, this is Fintan O'Toole, would seriously consider a run for president.
Yeah, this is, of course, once the general election's out of the way, I think minds start to turn towards
presidential election. It's time, isn't it? Yeah.
And let's start talking about who might run. And the
president. So most people, when they're asked, say, oh, I couldn't possibly, blah, blah, blah. His quotes are quite straightforward. He says you'd have to consider it.
He said it would be a great honour, and he would be very much interested if people asked him to, and that any citizen should consider it because he believes it's a very important role. I think Fintan O'Toole has always been consistent in that from his time. His support of Mary Robinson back in the day was huge, and he has always held her up as an idol kind of for Ireland and in Irish politics of his.
So would he be a good candidate? The talk is that the opposition parties, because they're now all happy families, would look for one candidate between them, an agreed candidate representing kind of half the voters. Would he be a good choice for it?
He will certainly appeal to the Labour Party, definitely. He'll definitely appeal to the Social Democrats that's in there. The problem is, will he actually appeal to Sinn Féin voters who know that they have a chance at, putting in a candidate who would get a reasonably sizable vote again, and they will have lots of people wanting to run. And without Sinn Féin backing
Sinn Féin's recent record isn't great,
though,
in these
things, very mixed,
is it?
But they use it to kind of gain their own profile, and it helps them a little bit internally in the party to put somebody up. And I think it's as much internal politics there as external. So getting a united candidate on the left is going to be particularly difficult. Fintan O'Toole will go to it as a journalist. I think he will go down very well with certain portions of the electorate in urban areas where it's maybe more left-wing. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, it's also suggested in the papers today that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael would like an agreed candidate, and they said they would like someone who is not going to be controversial for it. And then the name that comes up is Michael McDowell. Now, I don't know what's not controversial with Michael McDowell, but they say,
I think the point is he's very well up on the Constitution.
Yeah, he'll do it. But I think, I think there's probably for the Irish
people. He probably certainly wouldn't be outrunning our foreign policy, would he?
No, I don't think he'd be smart enough at that. I think he'd be still, enough to make a lot of people go, oh, hold on, that's not the Fianna Fáil I know or the Fine Gael I know or whatever within their parties.
Elaine, would you give any credence to either of these candidates or stories?
Yeah, well, look, when we're in this far out, I know we are now focusing on it because it's the next election. I think when we are this far out, it's almost like a celebrity ballot paper of perhaps what journalists and political anoraks would like to see rather than what we probably will see. But I think the interesting development here is the fact that the left-wing parties want to possibly put forward one candidate, and now we see today that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are thinking in the same direction. And I think that comes down to, if you look at certainly the past 2 to 3 presidential elections, they have been nasty bloodbaths, very similar actually to the US presidential campaigns.
With less money.
Very personalised.
Yes.
And less at stake.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I will
so
say, Elaine, if they're the two candidates, I'm going on holidays.
Well, maybe the government could put forward a female candidate, like Lorraine McGuinness.
Two fine middle-aged white men, two gammon versus gammon there in the presidential election. Okay, we will take a break. Our panel staying with us, Johnny Fallon, Gina London, Maura Trasson-Ni Callaghan and Elaine Loughlin.